The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the program and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Anne Scott James, Dennis Norden, Dillis Powell, and Frank Muir. And here's round one to test their respective vocabularies. 2 marks if they get the meaning of these words right. We begin this week with Anne Scott James. Anne, what is a palmiped? P-A-L-M-I-P-E-D, palmiped.
Well, it must be a sort of acrobat who walks on his hands, I should think.
No, you've got them at both ends.
Well, the ped part's obviously something to do with its feet.
Yes.
And the palmy part, if it isn't like its hands, it must be something in the shape of a palm tree.
Yeah?
I should think it means web-footed.
Absolutely dead right. It's web-footed. Animal, usually a bird, that is web-footed. Frank Miller, what is a nattier blue? N-A-T-T-I-E-R, a nattier blue.
Well, it's the colour of Christopher Robin's nanny's new Carnaby Street dressing gown. It's a nattier blue, but it hasn't a hood.
Yeah, I think you may be right, but we haven't defined it.
Well, it's the colour of a French postage stamp.
Yes, that's better. French is right.
Or an Australian mountain. Or butterfly. French. Yes, French butterfly.
Well, sort of like,
do you remember who invented it?
It's like a choux-fleur blanc.
Yes?
Nattier invented it.
That's right.
Monsieur Nattier.
Yes.
Yes, you're dead right.
Yes. Can you elucidate a little?
Absolutely right. Nattier blue is a very soft shade of blue. It was very much used by this particular French painter, J.M. Nattier, who died in 1766.
Oh, poor fellow.
Two marks.
No.
Dillis Powell, the meaning of the word somatic. S-O-M-A-T-I-C. Somatic.
Somatic. I think it ought to come from Aldous Huxley. Huxley's reference to soma, which encouraged people in his book Brave New World to be very kind of agreeable and amenable and do anything they like. No? No?
There's a like line it. In the lyric, isn't there? Psychosomatic symptoms.
That's
difficult
right.
To endure.
That's right.
Bodily.
That's all I wanted.
It was sort of bodily.
You were making it very complicated, Dillis.
Sorry.
Somatic means of the body, physical, corporeal, and the opposite of mental or psychic, and comes from a Greek word meaning just the body, like that. Psychosomatic means a mixed-up case with bits and bits of one bit of one and one bit of the other, as it were. Now, Dennis Norden, what is a ghoul? G-H-O-U-L.
Well, it's a word that was a boon to joke writers. Frank and I once did a musical version of Dracula in which we wrote a song called Demons Are a Ghoul's Best Fiend.
What's interesting is it didn't get any applause
then. Sit around these studios long enough.
But we haven't said what it does, then.
Well, it's a sort of nasty kind of ghost.
Yes, and it does something rather particularly nasty.
I have no doubt. I don't know. It sort of comes back and preys on people in some way.
That's right. I think you haven't quite got the main point,
No. Which
is the nastiest of the lot. I'll give you 1.5. A ghoul is a spirit that preys on corpses. This is the nasty thing about it. 1.5. Before we start round two, I give each team a quotation for them to write down, and then I want the 2 women members of the team to go on studying those quotations, because at the end of the program, I shall ask for the source of those quotations. Anne Scott James and Dennis Norton, your quotation is, "Where there's a will, there's a way." And Dennis Powell and Frank Muir, yours is, "They also serve who only stand and wait." And then at the end of the programme, I shall ask Frank and Dennis to give me their ideas of how these came to be said or written. For next a round of word origins, I want to know what the following words mean and how did these names originate. And 2 marks again. Anne Scott James, Hock. H-O-C-K, Hock.
What does it mean now?
And how did it come to mean that?
Well, yes. It means either a wine or a bit of a horse.
I want the whiny bit.
You want the whiny bit. Well, it's a rather delicious white, light white wine, apt to be oversweet, which comes in a bottle with a long neck.
And from where?
Well, it comes from Hockenheim.
You're very nearly right.
Province of Germany. Can you help?
you're very nearly right, Anne.
Hockenheim.
Hockenheim? That's right. Oh, and where would you find Hockenheim?
Oh, Rhinewise.
Yes, all right. 2 marks it is. Hock is a German white wine, definitely from the Rhine Valley, and it should really be used only for the bit that is produced in and around Hockenheim, which is one of the vineyard towns on the Rhine, but now is applied generally to any Rhine wine. Used in England to be called Hockamore, but we dropped it to make it short. Frank Muir, Puce.
It's mauvey, isn't it?
Yeah. Didn't you say? Yes, kind
mauvey.
Of dull mauve.
Yeah. Dull mauve, not exciting mauve. Mauvey, rather than mauve. And it comes from... Puce.
Puce.
It can't be.
Yes, you're getting it right.
My distinguished colleague thinks it comes from the French. Puce.
Yes.
Which means a flea.
You've got it. 2 marks. It means purplish brown in colour, and it was intended as meaning flea-coloured, because the word itself is the French word for a flea.
Pusillanimous means when all the fleas decide to jump together. Meanly.
Now, Dennis Powell, Percheron. P-E-R-C-H-E-R-O-N.
Sorry?
Percheron.
It's a horse.
Percheron's a horse, one of those large horses.
Yes.
With a lot of fur around the bottom of its legs.
Yes.
It comes from somewhere called Perche.
Yes, it
or
does. No, don't, well, no, stick Perche. To what
Perche.
And where would that be?
In Flanders.
Which? Hence the royal connection.
I think I'll do.
Flanders.
Percheron is a breed of very strong farm horses, and it's named after the district in France where they were bred, which is a place called Le Perche. And that's why it came to have that name. Dennis Norton, the Adelphi.
It's a theatre in the Strand, famous for Charlie Girl.
I can't fault
that. How he got the name?
I can't fault that, but can you think of another building with the same name?
Well, along there... I think that kind... I always thought that whole stretch along up to Aldwych
yes.
there was called Adelphi, not the Adelphi.
Yes, sir. Do you remember why?
Oh, brothers.
Yes.
Oh. Built by the brothers Adam, I should
yes,
think.
Yes, you've got
Johnny
it.
Johnny Girl.
Adelphi is the Greek.
I go with that.
2 marks it is. Yeah. Well, I'd unforgivably forgotten the theatre, but it was originally the name given to a block of places where people lived, residential buildings off the Strand, and they were designed in 1768 by Robert Adam and his three brothers, who were architects, interior decorators, and so on. Most of it has now been pulled down, but it has been a very famous place where famous people have lived, and it just means, it's a Greek word, Adelphoi, meaning the brothers. 2 marks. On our round about characters and novels and about the authors who created them, 2 marks again. Anne Scott James, where would you find Charles Swann and Odette de Crécy?
Well, I would find them in Proust.
And who were they?
Well, Swann was the hero of Le Côté de chez Swann.
Yes.
And Odette was his mistress, whom, although he adored her, he never really liked.
Yes, that's it. 2 marks it is. This is Marcel Proust's Remembrance of Things Past, La Recherche du Temps Perdu, and Charles Swann was the hero of one part of this long set of novels, Odette was his mistress and later, I think, became his wife.
Didn't she? I don't think so. It ends up with that marvellous sentence that he'd spent the best years of his life with a woman he'd never really cared for.
That's right, he did.
Which I think is wonderful.
Anyway, mistress is, I know, accurate. Frank Miller, in which works by which author would you find the character Stephen Dedalus?
It's in Ulysses by James Joyce.
Yes.
In another one.
It is, yes.
Portrait of the artist as a young man.
Quite right. 2 marks.
Also
well done.
By James Joyce.
There's Stephen Dedalus, who's often taken to be, in a sense, autobiographical to represent Joyce himself, comes in Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man and, more famously, in Ulysses. Dennis Power, in what book by what author was Arthur Corcoran introduced, and by what nickname was he better known? C-O-R-K-R-A-N, Arthur Corcoran. And he's known better by a nickname.
I think it's the nickname's Corky.
Not quite. Very nearly.
Oh, it's Kipling.
Yes?
It's Kipling. Storkin.
Yes. Storkin Co. Mine was P.G. Woodhouse.
Storkin Co. by Rudyard Kipling.
You had actually suspended clue from Frank. Jolly good. Rudyard Kipling in the schoolboy story Storkin Co. and Arthur Corcoran, his nickname was Storky, though Storky appears in some other short stories of Kipling at a later stage. 2 marks. Dennis Norden, what was the name of Nicholas Nickleby's father?
Outside of Mr. Nickleby Senior, he doesn't have one for very long. I haven't read this for years, because he goes straight on to Wackford Squeers.
That's right.
Very early on.
This is a rather trick question, I think, Dennis.
Was he an orphan?
Well, he was an orphan to that extent, but I was presuming.
No, that's all right. No, there was a father. Sorry, he died. But it's trick in another way.
Well, whichever way it's trick, it's tricky. You know, I give up.
It was the same as his son. The father, too, was called Nicholas Nickleby.
I say, that's tricky. Fooled me, didn't you?
Absolutely. Well, now we come to the last round. And go back to those quotations I gave the two teams earlier in the program. For 2 marks and Scott James, can you give me the origin of the quotation, "Where there's a will, there's a way"?
I don't think there is any origin, except it's just a proverb that goes back into the mists of antiquity.
Adam.
Handed down from...
Adam said.
Yep. That's good enough, it is. It's a proverb. I don't know where it starts. It was in a collection of proverbs made in 1640 by John Herbert in Book of Proverbs that he gathered together. But I think that's quite good enough. Now, Dennis Power, can I have the origin of your quotation? "They also serve who only stand and wait."
It's the last line of Milton's sonnet on his blindness.
As it is, that's quite right. It's Milton writing sonnet on his blindness. "Thousands at his bidding speed, and post or land and ocean without rest, they also serve who only stand and wait." 2 marks. Well, now I'm going to ask Frank and Dennis to give me their explanations of how these quotations came into being. And for this round, the marks will go to whichever incredible explanation receives the longer applause from the audience here in the theatre. So we go back to Dennis Norden and his quotation, "Where there's a will, there's a way."
The first hint that I had when I was developing a waistline was the day I got into my car and had to let out the safety belt, which was very worrying. And when I got home, I dashed up to the bathroom, stripped off, stood sideways in the mirror, and sure enough, I had a profile like a duffel bag. It was shattering. I left that bathroom in a state that can only be described as sadder but wider. Well, what does a chap do in that situation? Well, my friends were unanimous. Exercise. Have you noticed how vehement people get when they're urging physical exertion on someone else? And they was going for this rather prissy line about, "Don't forget, your body is like a..." You know, whatever. But one chap actually said, "Your body is like your house. You have a duty to keep it trim." I very soon put him in his place. I said, "To keep my house trim, a woman comes twice a week."
But
It did seem that the only answer was exercise, and that's not something that I'm really madly enthusiastic about. It's true that for a number of years I played tennis every weekend, but I had to give that up at the age of 38 because I lost the ball. And since then, I've never really taken any exercise. I think about the only time is when the electric toothbrush packs in and I get a bit of arm exercise then. But I didn't fancy at all this idea of spending hours every week bending and stretching. And you can imagine my relief when I discovered the wheel. Have you come across the wheel? It's in all the chemist shops. It's a sort of gadget designed specifically for reducing waistlines. It's a sort of... what is it? It's a small wheel, rather like a pram wheel. It's got handles either side. And what you do is you kneel on the floor and you grasp the handles and you push the wheel out along the floor to arm's length and pull it back again. And it only takes about 2 minutes in the morning, about 2 minutes in the evening. You do it a dozen times and you finish up with a waistline all lean and steely. So I bought one, a wheel. And that very night, I couldn't wait. As soon as I got in my pajamas, knelt on my knees on the floor, grasped both hands firmly, both the handles firmly, pushed the wheel out to its full length, and then went to put it back again. Now, there's one thing I should have remembered. I have this trick back. It's not exactly a slip disc. It's a kind of muscular thing. It isn't an illness. It's one of those things that if it was a car, it would be marked as not covered by a maker's guarantee. The effect of it is that when I get in certain positions, I lock. I just lock. And that's what happened to me that night. I locked into this crouch on all fours, arms slightly extended, and a wheel between my hands. To visualize it, if you could project into your mind a wheelbarrow, now, just put two hands either side the wheel. Now, you've got it. That was me. Now, when I do get this sort of locking of the back, there's this chap in Wimpole Street, actually, who knows exactly where to bash, which vertebrae to bash, that puts me back into working order again, you see. But the trouble was this now, how to get to him. So I couldn't move from this position, you see. However, very luckily, Frank was staying with us, and he's terribly... It's this sort of situation that seems to bring out the best in Frank. And he said immediately, he said, what we must do, he said, is push another wheel between his knees. He said, then we can pull him to Wimpole Street. But it's a pretty ignominious way to go through Regent's Park. On all fours, wheels between hands and knees, my tie knotted round Frank's rear bumper. On the back of my jacket, a crudely lettered placard on tow. To say nothing of where they put the little red light. It did teach me one thing, though. If your middle starts to inflate, let it. At the very worst, it comes in quite useful as an ashtray. And the only thing a middle-aged male really needs to exercise is caution. So to this day, I can't see one of those gadgets in anybody's house without a shudder. And of course, the thought, where there's a wheel, there's a waste.
Well, that was a day I wish I'd been in Regent's Park and wasn't. And so we go on to Frank Muir and his storyline. They also serve who only stand and wait.
Listening to Dennis's story as it very gradually unfolded. I was musing here on the nature of somebody being hurt like that. And I'd like to talk to you for a few minutes, 40 or 50. Doors are locked. About agony. Now, when I say agony, I mean A-double-G-O-N-Y. I mean severe pain. Now, it is quite clear to me that the origin of pain is working land, is in farming. I'm not just making this up, incidentally. The whole gist of this was hollered to me across a crowded room at a party by a man called Phil, who later turned out to be a philologist. This is the real truth, the derivation of these words. The origin of pain is in a garden. When I started this spring to organize my garden, I took advice from a very rich neighbor who lived on an estate in the village. At the bottom of the garden was the 18th hole, you know. The village is just going on to main drainage. And he said to me, don't use old-fashioned methods, old boy. You must mechanize. So I bought a huge mower, 36 inches wide, started up, tremble, tremble, bash, bash, bash. In half an hour, my self-winding watch had a nervous breakdown. And after 2 hours, my hands were shaking when I'd finished, pour beer, flung it all over the wallpaper, got on my bike and trembled straight into a wall. Four stitches. Four stitches in the head. Pain, you see. Didn't mow. One morning, August, came down, said my wife has been snowing. She said they're daisies. So I bought a sprayer. Mechanized. Don't do things by hands. Mechanize. It's a 2-gallon container, plastic, pump on top, you pump, 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 pump. Then you spray, it said, but you pump, 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 and you pump, and you pump. The palms of the hand, after 5 minutes, were going a sort of faint pinky colour in blotches, rather like the starts of bubonic plague. No good. So I thought, chuck all these things away, go back to first principles. If I'm going to weed the lawn, the thing to do is to do it standing up so no one isn't bent over, and locked like Dennis. Nothing you've got a grip, no work, got a broomstick. Put a nail at the end, 4-inch nail, very thin plastic tube, round wound with sticky tape all the way up, old-fashioned motor car horn full of weed killer at the top. Principle, stand up, pierce the daisy, touch the bulb lightly with a hand. Marvellous, weed killer injected into the heart of the root. It worked marvellously. I stood there, held the broom up with its spike at the bottom, very lightly, no need to blister the hands, and thrust heavily downwards. The curious thing about thrusting downwards is the thing doesn't go straight. I don't know why this is, but it just does not. Went right through my foot. Pierced my foot. Well, I'm out of hospital now. The agony has abated. So I say to you, I say to all those people who say, well, it's your own fault. I mean, thinking you can use great heavy industrial equipment when you're not used to it. You think you can labour when you're not used to it. No wonder you suffer. I say to them, with hand on my heart and foot in a bandage, they also suffer who only stand and weed.
Well, by your vote, ladies and gentlemen, Dennis Norden wins the contest of the two stories, and that brings us to a final score in which the entire contest is a dead heat.
In My Word, you heard Dilys Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and Dennis Norden, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schreien and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.